Welcome to BMP Radio. My name is Brian Pickowitz, and I am your host. The goal of this podcast is to connect you with individuals from the fields of fitness and lifestyle as they share their stories to ignite the fire within you. I want to thank you for tuning in as we inspire you to be a light and believe in more. What is going on, guys? This is Brian Pickowitz here at BMP Radio, and I'm super excited to share this episode with you guys as we head into episode number 19 of BMP Radio. So on today's podcast, I had a blast shooting this with Lindsay Rago, which obviously feels a little awkward for me telling you like that, because Lindsay is my girlfriend, and she is really the bedrock to the rest of my life. And so we shot this podcast in our apartment. The AC had died, so it made for a really interesting exchange. But the biggest thing that we tried to focus on was how to build a healthy relationship. Lindsay and I have been building our relationship and been together for 3 years. And during the course of that time, we've been long distance. When I was in New Hampshire, she was in Australia. She was a college graduate in a different school. I was living on my own. And then for the last year, we've been living with each other in Los Angeles, California, building our businesses and creating our fitness cultures within each one of those brands. And so there have been a tremendous amount of ups and downs. There's been a lot of things that we've had to work through. And I think, not in an arrogant way or without a narcissistic tone, but Lindsay and I's relationship has only been able to function because I think it is such a sound foundation, and it's built off of nothing but love. So this is a great podcast. We're really trying to talk about how to build a great relationship with your spouse, how to build the things that are going to make it so you can actually have a good and happy relationship with your spouse and your partner, or whatever that manifests itself for you. And then we also talk about how it culminates in being a fitness couple, how it culminates in building a business together as we launch our first business together, which is the Fitness Project. And so this is a lot of fun to shoot. Kind of ebb and flow, kind of some laughs, some lighthearted jokes in here. So I hope that you guys enjoy it. The biggest thing that we talk about is the Fitness Project. So the Fitness Project is our eight week group coaching challenge, where we take our clients through a transformation in that time, and we provide them with all the tools they need, the community they need, and all the resources that they are really seeking in order to make massive transformations in their life. And so you can sign up for the Fitness Project at thefitnessproject.us, and then this kicks off on July 25th, I believe, or 23rd. So one of those dates. I believe it's the 23rd. But it's an awesome project. We've had so much fun. It's been such a blessing for us to really give back to people and show them what it means to get that kickstart and start to transform your life. So if you're interested, click that link in the actual description here. But above all else, leave us a review, check us out, let me know what you think, share with a friend, do something that causes someone to have a positive day, maybe by listening to this or some other action. And above all else, enjoy. So this is episode number 19 with Lindsay Rago. What is going on, guys? This is Brian Pickowitz here, and I am excited to bring on to the show my lovely girlfriend, partner, my partner in crime, and my partner in business, Lindsay Rago.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you today?
I'm good. Life's good.
Life's good, yeah. The AC has been destroyed at our apartment.
We destroyed it.
I don't know if we destroyed it, but someone.
Somebody ran it for 48 hours. It wasn't us, though.
Yeah, it wasn't us. It must have been Jim.
It's our building manager. He came in and turned it on.
But I really wanted to use this opportunity to talk about life management skills as a couple. Now, obviously, you and I have lived together for the last year, but we spent a lot of time together before that. And I really wanted to kind of get your feedback as to what that experience has been like, not just for my own benefit,
sure?
But for other people's benefit too. So, you know, what are some of the things that you feel like, just in general, this last year has brought as far as realizing how to cope in a relationship? And that might be a two-part question, but I'm going to give it to you to start off.
How to cope?
Or how to develop
how to deal with that person?
How to develop a healthy relationship?
Yeah. So I think that developing a healthy relationship takes a hell of a lot of patience, a lot of being willing to be wrong, a lot of being willing to respond and not instantaneously react, and to not be prideful. And that's kind of goes along with not always needing to be right. But when you're prideful, you want to jump and blame the whatever's wrong on somebody else. And I think everybody has that instinct that they instantaneously want to do that when something feels like they might be blamed. They want to be like, no, it's not my fault. No, it's your fault. And I think it's really important to kind of step back from that. So I think that coping and building a healthy relationship
are different.
Yes. But I think everybody wants to have a healthy relationship. So understanding that all of those things are going to take years and years to develop is one thing, but then actually acting at every situation in that manner is another. And it takes like meditation and self-development to be able to do those things every single time, I guess.
So you and I moved in with each other, drove across the country from New Hampshire, and we live in Los Angeles now. With that, though, beforehand, you were in Australia going to college. We had several different moments where we were working through long distance pieces and really trying to build trust. What is a practical piece of advice for building trust in a relationship?
Practical piece of that would be building trust. I think I want to say it's an instant thing, but it's not. I think that you should trust your partner immediately. Personally, I believe that you should trust the other person before you assume the worst. So like in every relationship I've had, I always, right when we start dating, I trust that they're not going to hurt me, which has hurt me in the past. But I think it's also helped me in our relationship because I've had long distance a couple times like before I dated you. But in order to have a healthy relationship, I think you should immediately trust that person and then allow yourself to be hurt if that's going to be the case, because I think that's the only way to truly love somebody and to truly trust that person. Because if you start off like assuming that somebody's going to cheat on you or hurt you or do something that would prove your trust wrong, it's almost just a waste of your energy to assume that that's going to happen. So I personally think it's better to immediately put your trust in that person that you're with. Obviously you're going to need to go on some dates and kind of get to know that person and see if they're trustworthy, but usually you can tell, you have a sense about that person. I think that's kind of innate to every human being that has relationships or friendships. But yeah, I don't think that's a practical answer, but I think that's the real answer.
So be willing to be hurt.
Yes.
Be vulnerable.
Yes.
I think a lot of people aren't willing to be vulnerable completely because there is a component of trust that means that you do risk it.
I agree.
And I think that most of the time with risk and fear, it's always the worst assumed position because most people are influenced by people who are in their life who don't necessarily have the best intentions. So you have your Aunt Nancy, who, if my Aunt Nancy actually listens to this, this isn't me talking about her, but you have your aunt, or you have your uncle, you have that friend who has that bad relationship. So they start to build fear into you and you start to manifest that as something that is going to be inherent in your life. And so it's almost like you have to be willing to push through the coherence of doubt that people try to bring into your space and develop your own strategy and own trust within people too, but also not being naive.
That's interesting. I've never thought about that. Because if you do have, it is harder. I think it depends on the situation. Like if you have parents who have divorced each other, then you have a harder time looking at relationships and wanting to be committed. At least that's what people that I know who've had divorced parents tell me, is it's harder to commit yourself to a relationship thinking that it's going to fail because that's all you know. So I think that's one take on it. But I think more often is that people are willing to be vulnerable and they do break down that wall, and then somebody goes and hurts you and smashes through everything you thought was okay. Like, and I think that that is what shapes more people's views on relationship or person's views on relationships, is that they get really, really, really burned and then they close off and then they immediately don't trust anyone ever. And then someone has to do all the things right. And then if they possibly do one thing wrong, then there's the little bit of trust that was there is gone. And then you can't have a healthy relationship that way. That's what leads to like abusive relationships. And that's what leads to awful things where you never feel worthy of someone's love and they don't feel worthy of yours. And it's never good, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I think whenever you have an abusive relationship, whether it's mental or physical, it manifests as very demeaning of your self-love and self-respect. So it's not just the wall of how you talk to someone. It's the wall of how you talk to yourself, because that plays out as something that's constantly in your head. You begin to hear that person's voice as the voice that's neglectful and doubtful inside your heart. And that manifests itself as a piece of profound doubt as you go through each step of life, even if you're removing them. You know,
yeah.
Is that so? I know. So obviously, you and I have known each other forever. And I'm not trying to interview you guys on the spot. But what has been the greatest aspect that's allowed you to kind of work through some of those previous maybe mental abuses that aren't present now?
I think I understand what you're saying. Well, so, if you've been in a spot where you don't trust anybody and you haven't, or you've been in an abusive relationship or you've been hurt or something like that, how do you work through it? Basically, like, how do you
love someone again? That's like, how do you allow yourself to be that vulnerable?
I think that you choose to, point blank, you choose to, because whether or not you trust somebody is completely your choice. Like, you might have the instantaneous reaction to things that are like, did you talk to that person? Or did I talk to that person? Because like, if you are the abuser, it's different than if you're the abused. Because usually if you're the abuser, somebody has cheated on you in such a way that you regret how you responded in that scenario. So if you're the abuser and you don't trust anybody and that's how you take out that distrust, that's one thing. But for me, it was that I was the abused one. Therefore, I always felt like I was doing something wrong. So when, quote, like recovering from being in that abusive state, I guess you develop mental habits that say, this is wrong, that's wrong, you can't do that. And you do hear that person's voice or your own voice questioning if something's wrong. So if anybody who's been in an abusive relationship can probably understand that when you talk to somebody of the opposite sex who's not your partner, you have that little tiny voice in the back of your head that's like, you probably shouldn't talk to him. You probably shouldn't talk to him. Even if it's just like a friendly in-person discussion, like you still have that little voice in the back of your head. So when you're working through that it's not literally like this, but it kind of feels this way. Over time, you slowly can diminish that voice so that it's not quite so loud. So when you first get out of a relationship, you feel like you can't do anything, or you might be on the other end of the spectrum, but feel like you can't do anything with anybody else but your partner because you were punished for whatever you did. So you always have those, oh, I can't do that. Oh, I can't do that. I can't talk to that person. I can't do that. Or can't go out and have a drink. And every time and every instance that you squish that voice or push that voice away, you're going to make it quieter the next time. And I think that's my best advice for how to get through that. That's how I did it. And I think it was also like talking about it with the next person that I was with. It's like, hey, this is kind of what I've been through. This is kind of my instantaneous reaction to things. This is why I am like this. I want to change, but I just want you to be aware of how I currently am and what I'm working through. And I think that communication is really, really important for you to have another healthy relationship immediately following that bad one.
Or somewhere down the line.
Or somewhere down the line. Yeah.
What I want to do is I want to step away from the abuse, mental abuse. Maybe we can focus on something that's a little more fun.
A little brighter.
A little bit brighter. I didn't want to dive down that rabbit hole.
You never know. Somebody might have needed to hear that.
I hope they did. And what about the last year has been the most enjoyable?
Getting to know each other better.
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been so much fun. I think that, I shot a podcast today, and I had an instant knee-jerk reaction to talk about what Los Angeles is like. And I said, Los Angeles would be hell if I didn't have Lindsay, because I love her with all my heart, and she's everything to me.
No.
And I kind of ruined that surprise. But what do you think has made it so that the last year has been more, I don't want to say just enjoyable, but
you say enjoyable.
Enjoyable brings with it fun. I think that's more of optimistic.
Okay.
What's allowed it so you haven't felt like you're going to fall apart? And not just saying like having me as your rock, because I know that we balance each other out, but like, what was that tangible thing or the moments that you made you say like, you know, I'm going to be able to move through this?
Obviously there were a lot of situations where you had to have those breakthroughs, but with us, I think that what's made us stick through it, and I think that on social media we don't necessarily talk about the parts that are hard, and I don't think we should. I think those are very personal to us, but I think that having those hard times where we're forced to reflect on us and how we responded and how we could have made it better are the things that are absolutely or were necessary for us to have like the high happiest times. And I think also that for us to have those the most enjoyable times where it makes everything feel amazing and flawless as if there's never been any problems, or that we schedule in times to be blissful. We schedule in times that allow us to be blissful, I guess is a better way to put it. So like we scheduled in a trip to Disneyland and we made sure everything that we had to do that was maybe stressful or stressing us out was aside for that moment in time, that blip of time. And that is still like my favorite memory, and it will always be my favorite memory, or one of them, because it was just absolute bliss and we danced and the little streets were lit up in Disney and we rode roller coasters and it was fun and did all of the fun things in Disney and ate food and stuff.
I ate so many cookies.
Ate so many cookies. I don't think I did. I think I was pretty good that day.
I gave you a lot of bites of my cookies.
Yeah.
They're like the big peanut butter ones. Oh
yeah. I forgot about those. But yeah, so I think what's made this the most enjoyable are those times that we schedule in of relaxation. Because one thing that Brian and I always do, and I think I always suggest this if relationships come up with my clients, they don't always, but if they do, I always say even if you live with the person, you need to schedule in a time every week, like at minimum, maybe every 2 weeks, but that you guys go and you are outside of your normal atmosphere where you're just with each other and you can look into each other's eyes and talk about deep things and enjoy each other's company outside of your regular environment, outside of the stressors that life throws at you, and where it's a very neutral or just happy environment that you don't feel like will bring up anything that's negative.
I want to jump in there too, because I think that's really important, because obviously you're coming in, and I think that more of the women who are going to listen to the podcast are going to resonate with what you're saying, like scheduling time.
Yeah, but, that's true.
But for a man, I think that the men, if you're listening to this, I think it's really important and it's really significant to acknowledge when your partner needs you there. So like Lindsay talks about like the dark times or the things when we were going through struggles. And like when I first moved out of here, when I was out here in myself, meaning like Lindsay, her experience was different than what I was experiencing. I had a tremendous amount of anxiety. It was always like, oh, what am I supposed to be doing? Where's the direction I'm supposed to be taking in my life? Do I go with bodybuilding? Do I go with my coaching? Like, and that manifests itself as always trying to find a trigger and try to find something as an outlet. And a lot of times that would push me to almost want to blame Lindsay and blame you for whatever faults I was feeling because I didn't know how to handle them. And I think that the thing that really changed was when I called myself out on it. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, this is something that I do. And I, you know, I realized when I was saying things to myself that wasn't true. And so that reflected in me telling you like, hey, I think that I'm dealing with this. I just don't know how to deal with it, but I want you to understand like, this is a real thing for me. And mm-hmm. I don't need you to,
yeah.
I don't need you to, you know, give me advice. I just need you to understand what's happening. And I think that that's the tough thing for a lot of people is they want to be like, no, I'm fine. That's the masculine mm-hmm. thing. And I don't want to diminish masculinity because I think that doesn't solve the case. I don't think that solves the problem. And I don't think that men have to be told to be effeminate, but I don't think that men have to be told to always be strong. And so there was plenty of moments like that. So I would say that men, you should be willing to communicate in a proper way that shows your potential weaknesses, because the thing that's powerful about being in a relationship like this, and I would say that you and I are pushed together more than anyone else would be, because we spend literally at least 20 hours a day together.
Yeah.
I think it's probably accurate. It's probably 20 to 18 hours a day. And that's obviously I'm counting in the 24, counting in sleeping, guys. That matters. When you spend that much time with someone, you have to be able to fully commit to being as vulnerable as you can be and tell the truth, because what that does is it allows the other person to throw arrows at you and poke holes in your weaknesses, because you will not be able to correct your weaknesses unless someone tells you the truth. And so by seeking the truth about your weakness, you allow yourself to actually be seen for who and what you are. And that doesn't mean that you are a bad person. It doesn't mean that you are without saving or unworthy of love. It just means that you understand that you have weaknesses, because everyone does, and you can't cultivate action that's productive against that unless you have someone who is next to you who's willing to say, hey, you are acting without proper reason right now and it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I would like to second that to my men out there, because if me,
wait, you have men out there?
Just you. To the men out there. Ladies too, this is you. I mean, own it and figure it out. But you, if your partner is diligently trying to become a better partner, which I would say both of us do, I talked about this on a post the other day, but we both, I think, maybe Brian too, but listen to like podcasts or relationship, I'll say gurus because I can't think of a better word for it, maybe therapists, but people who teach you how to be better in a partnership, a relationship, a friendship, anything along those lines. And those efforts are of no use if you can't fully understand your partner, because they're hiding things, hiding how they feel or feeling weak and not wanting to say so. So if you're diligently trying to be better, a better partner for your partner, you kind of expect that that person is doing the same. And I think that that cohesive building together needs to be present for you to grow in your relationship. Because if you're not, let me know what you think on this. Because if you're not growing in a relationship, I think, and like overcoming challenges, I think that's when relationships get boring and they lose their passion.
Well, I think it has to do with both people have to be growing at least at their own pace, but they have to be growing together. So like if you see a relationship, like I had a relationship where I went through a tremendous amount of growth and the other person wasn't as willing to want to grow, or they couldn't grow. And that caused a tremendous rift. And I decided that my life was worth pursuing and finding my potential. And I decided to allow myself to grow. I decided to experience things that I wanted to. I decided to compete in bodybuilding. I decided to start my own business. I decided that I wanted to be an entrepreneur and that I wanted to touch people's lives. And the other person in that relationship didn't feel that same way and didn't have that same kind of passion. So we grew apart. And so I think the thing that you and I say a lot is that we're on separate mountains, but we're climbing them at the same time. Or at least like when one of us has reaches a valley, the other person's reaching a peak. And so it's just this constant like push and shove, but I think it's in a very productive way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how a relationship grows, is through is through constant force.
Personal development, constant growth.
Constant force and growth. Like, you have to be constantly forcing yourself to be uncomfortable. You have to be constantly forcing yourself out of your comfort zone. And you have to be constantly forcing yourself to be willing to look at the things that aren't strengths for you and how you can get better, or at least maybe enhance your strengths too. Because maybe your weaknesses aren't the things that you need to figure out. Maybe it's how you can maximize your strengths. Off of that, what do you feel like are some of the biggest reasons why people in our generation have a hard time maintaining a healthier relationship?
I think that everybody is, a few things come to mind. I think that one, a lot of people are sold that relationships should be really easy. They should be flawless. They should be wonderful. They should be perfect. And I do agree with that to some degree. I think that you need to have a beautiful relationship that you would consider beautiful. So everybody's going to think that that's different. And some people might want specific things, but I don't think that a man needs to do the dishes and take out the trash and make sure everything is perfect at all times and never fighting. And because I don't think that there's no such thing as a perfect relationship, because every human is imperfect. And I think that when you try to force perfection in a person, that's when relationships fail. And you have to be able to be willing to find the balance between those things, because a healthy relationship is different than a perfect relationship. A healthy relationship has give and take. It has back and forth. I think you'd probably agree. Granted, we didn't fight for a solid year. We didn't really fight.
In our relationship?
Yeah. I don't think we had a fight.
Yeah, I would say it's accurate.
We might have bickered, but it wasn't a fight. And I don't think that, what do you think is a healthy amount of time to have a fight? When do you think that's acceptable?
It depends on the severity of the action.
Yeah.
Depends on how hurt I am or how hurt you are. Mm-hmm. I think it matters what's been done. I think some fights are irreparable. Without repair, you can't repair them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make up words. Some offenses are going to be obviously without repair, but I think that for the most part, if it's a verbal miscommunications or miscommunication of feelings, I think that you should never go to bed with those feelings. Mm-hmm. You should be able to get them out. So I'd say at least 24 hours is the maximum.
And so I was thinking more along the lines of, I agree with that, but I think that if you're fighting, having a real fight every month or every 2 weeks, I think that's probably not a healthy relationship. And I think it's hard for people to define that because they don't know really what their standards are. I think that if we fought all the time and it never was getting better, that wouldn't be, I would know that that's not a healthy relationship.
Well, and off of that, I think that most people think that they have to stay in the relationship that they're in.
Well, I think yes. And I think there's a time, and there's many relationships that you should work through, but there's also many that you shouldn't. So why don't most people have a healthy relationship? Probably because they're not willing to look inward.
I think that they're not willing to, that's a huge one. I own my faults. I think that we both do.
Now we do. Now we've gotten better at it. But because we've recognized that that's what you have to develop as a person. It's not just, I know it's about loving yourself and loving who you are, but you have to continually evolve as a person in order for your relationship to be healthy and continue to maintain it.
I would say also that you have to consider yourself wrong because as much as you consider the other person wrong. So when you're in a fight with someone, if I have a disagreement with you about whatever has happened, I try to also remove the emotion from it when I can, once I've allowed it to kind of push down. And I also look at, maybe I didn't articulate my thought the right way. Maybe I'm to blame. Maybe a good example is when a client talks to me about I don't feel like they respect me and they show me love the way that I want to be shown love. It's like, well, are you also showing them love the way that they want to show love?
Yes.
Like, are they valuing the things? Do you value the same things, and do you also understand what they value as a partner?
And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say too off of that, that once you understand that, you can look at whether or not you're a good partner too, because you probably have many flaws that are manifesting themselves on the surface that are making it so it's really hard for your partner to want to feel like they should reciprocate that. Mm. Because the only time that, for most people, unless they're, I would say most people who are actually happy in their relationship are willing to reciprocate love, because that's what love is. Mm-hmm. Love is my way of showing the value that you give me through appreciation and affection. And that connection is what makes it so that we can have a good sound foundation, and that we can actually build the relationship that makes it so both of us have something to offer each other. And I think that that's how you actually construct a healthy relationship, by looking inward and saying, what do I have to change about myself? And what am I doing wrong in this instance? And then bringing that to the surface too. But one thing I wanted to dive into, and I want to get your feedback on, because I know that we have some certain rules that allow us to really function productively when we're together. So what rules do you think that people should set to make it so that they are able to be present with each other?
Well, we do have rules to shut our phones off when we're doing something together. Or I feel like that's the biggest one. It's like when we're and doing a date or something with friends or together, phones go away. And that's like the most classic thing to be present with. But, and we always eat together. That's another one. We always make sure that we're, which I think was more my rule than your rule, to be honest. I wait to eat with Brian, and Brian better not eat without me.
And then off of that, so social media will be a big distractor to a lot of people's relationships. I've talked to people in the past, clients who've been like, oh, we spend time with each other, but we just on each other's phones. We're just on our phones checking social media. And it's like, that's not presently spending time with each other. So it's about spending quality time with each other, being able to actually be present. And one of the things that I always try to do is shut my phone off, or at least leave it alone when we're eating together and have a conversation that has something to do with whatever might have conspired or happened in that day.
Mm-hmm. I also think I set my own rules for myself sometimes too. It doesn't always mean that whatever I would want to receive from him is what I try to give to him as well. So like when we're riding together in the car, rule for myself is to put my phone in my bag and not look at social media for the half hour that we're driving together or whatever, because that's 30 minutes that we could actually be present together, because he can't look at his phone.
I'm driving.
Because he's driving. So I shouldn't look at my phone either, because that's fair.
I like to drive. That's one of my rules. I have to drive.
I don't like to drive. Not in LA, no thank you.
No, Los Angeles traffic can be hell.
And knowing where you're going.
Yeah, I have the mind of a Atlas.
Maybe
Google an Maps. Atlas. Yeah, Google Maps. It's like imprint. One thing I want to talk about, and I wanted to kind of break down a couple more of these pieces because I think they're really important. What are the rules for training with each other? When should someone go to the gym with their spouse, and when should someone not go with the gym with their spouse? What should some of the motivations be, and what is the wrong motivation to have in that instance?
I think that you can train with your significant other if you are at a similar level of understanding of training. So if you're just going to go for a run, that's fine. But if you've never weightlifted before or vice versa, and you try to train and weightlift or do something structured together, it's going to be a nightmare, because you're going to want to get a good workout and your significant other isn't going to know what's going on. So I think you need to be on the same level or willing to teach the other person. Like Brian would have a few sessions with me when I first started training, and he would teach me how to train. And that was something that I would assume in his head, maybe, right? Like you were like, I know I'm going to have to take a couple instances to kind of explain or be a little bit slower with this. Maybe.
I think this is the right answer to piggyback off of that. I saw a passion for it.
Okay.
So that's like huge. Like okay. when like it's, we're comparing seeds to a full grown apple. So like what you're saying is if your person is really into training, then you have to be at the same level. So you have to allow your seed to grow. Reverse engineer that. If you're an apple and you have someone who's a seed, you cannot force them to grow. They have to want to grow. So
don't drag each other.
Yes. Oh God. That is the biggest thing I see people do. Well, so-and-so won't go to the gym with me because they just don't like it. And it's like, well, have you tried to communicate why they should go to the gym with you? And no. Well, do you know how important it is to them? No. Well, do they feel like they need to improve themselves? Not really. Well, then maybe they wouldn't go to the gym with you.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But whenever you are forcing someone to do something, they will never do it. And they will be miserable. And unless something drastically changes, and I'm talking drastic. Like
total shift.
Yeah. 180. The only time kids enjoy eating green vegetables is when they realize that they will die if they don't.
Okay.
So, well, you know what I mean? Like you can't force someone's hand for something that is going to require them effort. To put effort in.
Yeah.
So the reason why I helped you out is because you were in a position where I could see it in your eyes. Like, you know, I want to do this. I want to get in shape. And I saw you were going to the gym with me anyways. Like you were always like, when I first started doing my competing in my business and training people, you were at the gym. So like, I think that's how we even got close to each other. It was like, you were at the same gym as me all the time. You just weren't doing things the right way. And so it was kind of like, hey, you know, you should try doing it this way. And then I remember the first time I ever let you train with me, I was nervous as hell because I was like 4 weeks out from a contest. So I was like, you need to be able to like actually be focused this time. Like you can't be like a mess around gym session. And I remember the focus in your eyes. I remember like, yep, okay, we're going to do this. And it was a great experience. But that wouldn't have been the case if you weren't ready. I know that I've seen people, and even in my own experiences, like when you're trying to train with someone, like if you have a girlfriend, you have a boyfriend, and I usually see it the other way, but let's say it's either or, you can't expect for them to be new at something and just pick it up. So like if you're going to take the task on of training your spouse, go and train yourself first. And make it a priority to train them, and maybe in like a half an hour session or a 45 minute session. But if you're trying to do it all at once, you're going to get frustrated because you're going to have, the expectation that they're getting it faster than they need to. And it's just not practical. So break up the sessions, give yourself time at the gym, and then give them the time they need so they can actually figure out what they're doing.
Yeah. I think those are the two, I guess that's the two biggest things. I mean, you could throw other things in there. Like you need to both be, you both need to be vibing. That's a big thing. If you do both train, like I find a lot of couples who are both into fitness or into exercising, they will try to train together and they won't know when to say no, like that's not. Again, that kind of goes back to the self-improvement and like mindfulness thing. Like if you feel like you're off, feel frustrated about whatever, stress, you should probably not train with your significant other because you're going to take something out on them. It's not going to go well. And Brian and I have been at that point many, many times where we start training together, we realize that our energy is not together, and then we break off. And that's okay. That's fine. I don't think it's a big deal. So it's being able to recognize that, be mindful.
What misconceptions do people have about being a fit couple?
That's a good question. Misconceptions would probably be that they are, I would say that they're vibing all the time. What?
I would say sex life.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
I would say
it's super great and perfect all the time. And when you're preparing for a contest and you're both shredded that you want to have sex all the time. That's a good, that's true. That's not true. Because when you get that ideal body, it doesn't mean that you feel ideal. When you have an ideal body, that typically means really low body fat or like whatever social media presents as such. And when you're at that level of leanness,
depletion.
Depletion. Yeah. You don't necessarily want to be a person, let alone have a great sex life. So that's definitely a misconception, I think.
Yeah. I think that when you're that depleted, your energy is shot. You don't want to have sex. Like,
you don't want to be active. You don't really want to do much except for train when you have to.
Yeah. I think that, and I also think that people think that you and I just eat kale and chicken. Like and let me quantify that, like, that being a fit couple means that for most of the time that there's a lot of balance in between that. So it's, you know, we might show up at the gym, but we also have the balance in our life to kind of do other things. So our lives, although we have built fitness businesses and fitness companies and launched projects together, that doesn't necessarily mean that we are so intense that we lose sight of everything else. I think that that's the big thing. It's like, it's not, fitness isn't our sole focus. It's just like a big piece of our life.
Yeah. And I also think that some conceptions are true.
Yep.
I think that you see a fit couple and you assume that they go to the gym every day, they eat pretty healthy, and that's true. That's 100% true. We go to the gym 6 times a week, and we don't preach that you have to do that, but we ourselves do that. And we also eat, I'd say, quote, clean. We try to eat healthy foods that make us feel good, at least like 90% of the time. And then the other 10%, we're getting froyo, having some type of meal, sushi. I was going to say pizza, but I don't really like pizza.
Well, I can't think of the last time we had pizza.
Yeah, we don't really eat pizza, but like...
It's because Los Angeles don't have buffalo chicken pizzas.
Brian's upset about that.
I have to make that point. You guys have to know, if you're listening to this anywhere else and they have buffalo chicken pizzas, I am so happy for you, and I just want you to know that you're blessed.
Yeah, but I think there is a balance that we have.
Yeah, well, I think that being a fit couple also means that you share that same passion for fitness. It's like being an artistic couple. Like, you know, it's like anything else. Like, there's musicians who are couples. There's people who are doing different things with their lives in an artistic way. Fitness is just kind of another faction of that. And I think that it doesn't make it easier. It just kind of makes it more fun and enjoyable because you do have someone to share that with. But it's about learning about yourself, because you and I walked in each other's life when we both had kind of figured out a lot of ourselves. Or at least I had figured out enough of myself that I was ready to push you.
Yeah. Great point.
So this is going to be a green topic, but what about being in business with each other? So we launched the Fitness Project. Fitness Project is our group coaching project. That's where we take, you know, people into this 8-week challenge and push them. That's our first project together. What has been something you've learned over the course of seeing the success of this group challenge?
That I've learned about working with you?
As a relationship. Building a business together.
So the Fitness Project was kind of my baby. It was my... At first idea, I guess, that I really wanted to do with Brian. I wanted it to be, and I think he really wanted it. I think he wanted to do it too. It was our thing. It popped into both of our heads as a great idea, and we kind of were, I was a little bit nervous to do something together, but I had a lot of faith in us to be able to kind of understand how to work together. And I knew that my strengths laid in the execution and the specifics. And I knew that Brian's strengths laid in promotion and talking about it and getting people excited about it and being that big vision guy. So the two of us together with those strengths, I thought would really be successful. And there are certainly things that we recognize that we shouldn't do together, maybe, but this was something that I could take the execution, he could take the vision, he could take the excitement, and we could really make it powerful. So I think recognizing strengths was really, really a big, big thing, and weaknesses, of course, but this playing to our own strengths instead of trying to force Brian to do something that he didn't want to do and he wasn't necessarily good at, per se, the details of the situation. I tried to get him to do things that were my job, and that was kind of productive, but sharing was important.
Well, I think as an entrepreneur, and I think as entrepreneurs in the space of business and life coaching and fitness coaching, my two cents is that you do have to understand what hat you have to wear. So like for me, I am very visionary. I'm good at seeing the whole picture. I'm good at the marketing. I'm good at those kinds of pieces. I'm also really great at communicating with people. Lindsay, on the other hand, is really great at the specifics, the details, the what is everyone going to see? How's it going to look? The more graphic design element of things. And because we both are so great at working people, because Lindsay obviously has the light for that, that's the great conjoiner that makes it so we can both be able to do it together. So it's like the mutually shared passion for fitness and wellness and personal development and helping people become better makes it so the fitness project can just shine. And so, you know, the results that people have seen in the fitness project has been amazing. And I know that that's a manifestation of both of us being a good team together. And I think that you have to be able to sit down in those specific times and map things out and be like, okay, what do we actually have to get done? And that's been a learning experience of itself. But I think that comes down to the rules. You have to have rules set for your relationship. You have to have specific things you have with your relationship. You have to be able to communicate, because when you say certain things, I listen. And when I say certain things, you listen too. And I think those are kind of the cornerstones of that foundation.
I would agree. Absolutely. I think that when it comes to having something more serious, like a business or something with each other, that kind of brings in other people into you. That brings other people into both of your relationship together. And that's kind of a big deal, because you're introducing other lives into your space and you have to be on point for those other people. So it still always comes back to communication.
And I think too, I know like when you first started coaching people with RegoFit, people were like, oh, well, are you going to like have Lindsay work underneath you at BP Fitness? And I said, no, I want her to create her own business, because you and I were in a place where we could have started a business together. There wasn't that foundation yet. Mm-hmm. I think we would have survived, but I think that it's been far more successful to move out to Los Angeles to take that next step, to really learn about ourselves and learn how to love each other and then start the next piece together, which is the Fitness Project.
The Fitness Project is the next season.
What is, and one of the last questions I want to ask you, we're going to this last round. What is the most important thing that you, this is such a self-serving question, maybe I'll answer it too. What are some of the three most important things that you look for in your partner and your best friend?
And your best friend? Most important things are similar. I don't want to be cliche. It's tough, because you have to have, I feel like there's a reason that there's cliches though, because they're true, right? So in a partner, I look for at least some similar interests, some desire for adventure or for fun or for things out of the necessary norm, I guess. So those are two. And then the ability to be present and love deeply or another. I don't think those are too cliche.
I don't think so.
I like to have someone who loves the adventure piece, which I've never really thought about before, but be able to love me and show me. Because I think that like all the little things like patience, communication, even like fitness and things like that, those evolve and they grow. But the innate desire to adventure and to enjoy life, that's not, it'll grow as you travel, but I wouldn't want to be with somebody who loves staying still.
I think it's energy.
Yes.
So like I want, like for you and I, the first day we were hung out, we had that energy. Mm-hmm. Like, and I've talked about that many times, but there's that instant spark where I was like, wow, there's something special here. And at the same time, to be able to manifest that in different areas, I think is what matters the most. You have to be able to have the same energy as someone. If someone's low energy, they're not gonna, you know, mesh with you.
Yeah.
And I think from my standpoint, it comes down to someone who is operating without judgment and always understanding, because I don't need someone to tell me I'm wonderful. I need someone to give me harsh love, or at least be able to listen and not give judgment. So I think that's the most important thing to find in a healthy relationship.
That's your number one?
Yeah, I would say understanding and lack of judgment. Mm-hmm. Those kind of coincide, and probably a better word, but empathy maybe.
Mm-hmm. And unconditional love.
Yeah.
I don't think everybody has the desire to unconditionally love, because I think a lot of people have conditions that they're subconscious.
I would agree with that. And that comes down to personal development.
Ooh. Bring it back.
Bring it back. Well, so I do a lightning round, and I don't know if I want to have you do it, but I guess I'm going to, because I think it's
bad at these.
Well, it'll be easy, I promise. Okay. So what is one thing that you like to do for leisure?
Leisure? Cook.
Cook?
Yeah.
Good food?
Good food. Delicious food.
What kind of food?
New ideas and recipes and desserts specifically.
Protein ice cream?
Like protein ice cream and cake.
What is one book that has changed your life?
It sounds bad to say, but Your Badass at Making Money certainly changed my life.
How so?
Because I had a really hard time changing my money mindset and being a bit scarce and being afraid to spend money. And I'll be very open about that. It's taken a lot of effort for me to get to this place where I'm okay with investing in myself in many, many ways. And reading that book kind of forced me over like the months it took me to read it, 'cause I'm slow. It forced me to go back to fixing that mindset over and over as I read through it. So by the time I got to the end, I was like, okay, I got this. So I think that was a big change, life-changing one, mostly because when I was younger, I really read fiction books. As a kid, definitely didn't, like New Moon didn't change my life. Twilight.
What slogan or saying you feel like represents you the best?
Oh, see, that's the easiest question because I already have the slogan. No, you can, then you will. To anybody who doesn't know me, that's my slogan. That's my life motto. That is my coaching motto. That is everything to me. Because if you know you can do something beyond a shadow of a doubt and you have confidence that you can do it, you will absolutely 110% accomplish it.
I love it. What is one area of your life that you feel like you need to improve on the most?
What would I call this area of my life? Self-development doesn't count.
Maybe be more specific on what you could say self-development, but like, where does that lead?
Okay. So broad topic, self-development, minor topic, uncovering my subconscious innate reactions to things and why I do them. And that's going to sound like really woo woo and like specific and makes no sense, but I have a tendency to immediately blame everybody else. That's not my fault. And that's just an example of something that is very embedded in me for some reason, and uncovering those things and then attacking them and no longer having those habits is something that I really need to improve upon, but I'm doing it every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you could give yourself advice 20 years from now, what advice would that be?
So this question is that I'm giving my 43-year-old self advice.
Yeah.
Oh, it usually goes the other way. What would you tell your younger self?
The idea is that the advice that you would give yourself 20 years from now is the advice you should best take now.
Oh, okay. Interesting take on that. Advice to 43-year-old Lindsay would be, I hope that you still love with your whole heart and that you're able to be incredibly present and love every second of your kids' lives and love your husband with all your heart and show him every day.
He will be a lucky man. I got two more at least. What's one person who you would point to as the greatest inspiration in your life?
I'm thinking about how I grew up and who I admired because I think that my, despite having our bouts, my mom was still a really big inspiration for me because of her tenacity, and but also my dad for his stubbornness. And I know that as I grew up, there wasn't, I didn't really have too many people that I looked up to, which is why I think this time in my life is a lot more, is a, changing a lot faster than my childhood changed, I think, internally. So I would say as I, my biggest inspiration as I grew up was definitely my mom for always getting what she wanted. And then certainly my dad for making a decision and never backing down from it.
What's your one rule for life?
Take on the things that you don't think you can do. The end. Because then when you do them, you'll every time that you do something that you really don't think that you can do, you breach into a new level of being. And that might be as simple as forcing yourself to introduce yourself to one new person a week because you think that that's stupid and you would never do that. And by doing that thing, you breach a new level of self every time you do it.
I love it. What are some of the current projects you're working on, and what are some of the things you have going on in the space of Lindsay Rago?
I have so many projects. It's ridiculous. I'm trying so hard to like space them out so I don't overwhelm the world with them, but I have.
We have,
I'll end with that one. So personally, I'm still growing my one-on-one coaching. I'm accepting clients like 2 weeks from now. So I'm kind of in a different phase right now, but that's always growing. Apparel is launching in a couple weeks. First round hats and shirts, and then working on a Rego Fit app at some point this year. It needs to happen this year. And the last project is the project that Brian and I have together, which is a fitness project. So that's going to be launching this week. So at least the enrollment will be open this week. Whenever you watch or listen to this, it'll be July, up till July 13th, I think. And then that's going to start with a whole new round of people. We're hoping to double last times and really change a lot of lives. And I think that with just the first 14 people and we had, the results were insane. So really, really excited for that project. I know that it's going to grow every single time we do it. So this is just round two of endless, I don't know. So those are my current projects and I'm really excited for every single one. So it's trying to like schedule them accordingly.
Where can people find you?
People can find me if they haven't already found me through you.
Yeah, no, that might be awkward. Like, if, who is this lady?
Who's this woman? Got this I'm Brian's wife, girlfriend. And you can find me at RagoBomb on Instagram. You can find me at LindsayRagoFit.com. You can find me on Facebook at RagoFit or Lindsay Rago. And YouTube, which is, I can't believe I just forgot YouTube. That's my baby. YouTube is just Lindsay Rago. You'll know it's me. I have about 1,000 subscribers.
Woo, woo.
Woo, woo.
Thank you so much, Lindsay, for coming on the podcast. I hope that they, whoever listens to this, gets something valuable about relationships. And I really appreciate your time tonight.
Oh, thanks, Bob. You're welcome.
So, yeah, I think it's exciting. You guys can find the fitness project at thefitnessproject.us. You can sign up there. The enrollment ends this next Friday, July 13th. And it's Friday. No way. It's not Friday the 13th. It can't be.
Well, we definitely said that in the video.
Is it Friday the 13th?
It's Friday the 13th.
It's Friday the 13th.
Oh, my God. That's when you know. It's a good thing, though.
It's a good thing. It's like a lucky charm.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see you there.
Thank you guys for tuning in. This is Brian Pickowitz. You can follow me at brianpickowitz.com and at brianpickowitz on Instagram. But please make sure to rank us on iTunes so we can get this message to as many people as possible and really boost this podcast. But thank you all for tuning in. I just want to remind you to continue to be a light and inspire others to believe more. I'll see you guys. Thank you for tuning in to BMP Radio. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And if you like this talk, leave it a review. You can follow us on Instagram at BMP Radio or my personal account at Brian Pickowitz. That's PickowiZ. Thank you all for tuning in. And just a reminder, continue to be a light and inspire others to believe more.